Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. Hello everyone and welcome to another Sport and Lifestyle Biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. Unbelievably, it's the last show of October and we've got another blockbuster for you. Now en route to Japan, we've got an interview with our good friend Holly Doyle, joint second in the jockey's title this year, classic winner, and nothing could be better. Now, off to Japan, as we said, tick another thing off her list. And we also have Sam Thomas, head coach of Principia College women's football team. Sam and I do a lot of work together, but it's all for the good of women in sport. And Sam just goes through basically what he does and how we can achieve our goals. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, everybody, back with me this week is the lady we all love to hear from. The best female jockey is Holly Doyle. Hi, Holly.
Hello, are you right?
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good. Busy, busy?
Yeah, very busy, yeah. It's crazy at the moment.
Yeah, and you said you were riding 7 days a week at the moment.
Yeah, we've got races 7 days a week now, pretty much all year round, so it's pretty relentless.
Pretty relentless, and as we come on to, you know, got to find time for the gym, got to try and find time for a bit of relaxation as well, I presume.
There's not much time for that, but obviously keeping fit is quite a big priority, so yeah, all in.
Perfect. Well, we'll just start off with the current season, really. You know, we've spoken to you before about how you, you know, got into the sport, how you broke the record, how you've moved things further on, and, you know, how you do transcend through the sport for female jockeys because you are so dedicated. But this year, I think you've got about 129 winners already, which is brilliant. That's stacked up with group wins and even a classic. How do you feel the season's gone for you so far?
Yeah, my season's going really well, obviously. Quality of horses I'm riding has got a lot better and I've been a classic winner, so I can't complain. It's all I wanted, so things are going well.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. You know, I think as we've spoken through the years, you know, first of all, you wanted a group winner, which you got, and then you wanted a group one winner, which you got, and then we was like, have you got a target this year? It's a classic, and you've got that as well. I mean, you say you're riding better quality horses, but obviously that comes with your talent as well. You wouldn't be riding them if you weren't good enough.
Yeah, no, thankfully the kind of stepping stones I've had all over the last few years have kind of led to this, so it's excellent really, and just got to keep it going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, and obviously, you know, we have said before how hard you work, and when you get some spare time, you're dedicated, you're in the gym, you've said yourself, not much time for relaxation. One of the horses I want to talk to you about briefly, if that's okay, is Nashua. She's the filly that won you your first classic, the French Oaks, the Prix de Diane. You mentioned actually in January when we spoke, she was one to look for this season. What an amazing partnership you've gained with her.
Yeah, no, really lucky to have come across her, and she's very special. I mean, I haven't ridden many like her before, but I think when they're that good, they are exceptionally special, and she's a dream, really. She's got great mind, great temperament. Physically, she's, you know, a lovely stamp of a horse. So.
Yeah, so perhaps even more improvement to come?
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully she's going to stay in training next year as a four-year-old, so she's still got a bit of growing to do, and she'll be a big girl at the end of the year, that's for sure.
That's wonderful, isn't it? You know, plenty of growth. And I think that's becoming a little bit more of the norm, isn't it? That if you're a Derby or the Guineas winner, you tend to be packed away, especially if you're a colt sort of thing. But the flat horses do tend to stay in training a little bit longer now.
I suppose so. I mean, horses develop at different rates. Yeah. It depends how quickly horses are developing or not developing as to when you call it a day on their career, really.
Good. It sounds like we've got quite a bit to see of her yet. What makes her special, Holly? Is it the fact she's got an amazing turn of foot? Is the fact she travels well? You mentioned her mind. Or has she just got a bit of everything?
Yeah, she's got it all, really. And she's by the super sire, Frankel. So she's got a lot of different qualities. And for me, the strongest one is her temperament. She has to race at the big occasions, and they need to have the right temperament for those days.
Yeah, it's great. So just to explain more to people, it means that she doesn't get overexcited or perhaps lose the race or some of her energy before she starts.
Touch wood, so far she hasn't done that, and she's been excellent. So hopefully that can continue.
Yeah, I mean, she's been brilliant, and I think you've ridden her almost from everywhere, as it were. You know, Goodwood, you dropped her in. And when I say she won as she liked, I know it's easy to say that, but she seemed to win pretty comfortably.
Yeah, she's not one-dimensional. I can ride how I think's the best way to ride her effectively, to how I think the race will be run. So it's really nice to have a horse like that.
Yeah, it was nice to see that, because in the French Oaks, I think you rode her a little bit further forward because of the draw, and she coped with that as well.
Yeah, she's pretty versatile. That's what you want. She's excellent.
Yeah, you can't ask for more than that, really, especially of a horse of that quality. It must help.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big help.
Yeah, fabulous. And just one note about her. In our Oaks, she finished third, which is still brilliant, and it placed you in an English classic, which is amazing. Did she not quite get the trip, or did she just not stay as well as the two that beat her?
I think she just didn't stay it, really. I mean, I'm not saying she's never going to stay that far, because she might do in the future, but at that stage in her training regime, she wasn't strong enough to stay at that stage.
Well, you said she's got plenty more growth in her, so that's good. And just one final thing about her, if I may, Holly, just so that the listeners can look at and watch such a wonderful horse, because it's always great to watch the best horses. Anything later on in the year that she might be targeted for, something in America? And is she going to stay at 10 furlongs for the moment?
Yeah, I think she'll probably stay at 10 furlongs at the moment. She might be pointing towards the Breeders' Cup, but before that, she might go to France for the Prix de l'Opera.
Lovely. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely fab, especially if you can pick up that race on that weekend as well. Brilliant. That links us on nicely to riding abroad. I know that when we spoke before, you said that it would be nice to ride abroad and get the different cultures and different styles of race riding. Obviously, Nashua won the French Oaks for you. You rode in the Saudi Cup last year. Absolutely fabulous. I presume that's also part of you not having a day off, is the fact that your days off from before are now filled up with races abroad.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, at the moment, it's the Festival in Deauville over every Sunday, so if I'm not here, I'll probably be there. So it's quite busy, and you know, that's what I've wanted there. I want to ride abroad, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that you said that before. I know that the constant on the go does suit you, from having chatted to you, that you are totally driven. And as I said, you are a trendsetter for any jockey, really, not for women jockeys, for any jockey. I mean, you and Tom seem to be on the go all the time. What's your state of mind this year for the championship? Do you think William Buick might be too far away?
Yeah, I'd say William's home and hosed, really, unfortunately. But I'd love to finish second or third, so I'll try and ride as many winners as I can.
That would be great to break into the top three. I think you were fourth last year, which is a great achievement on its own. Second would be good. Have you got anything else big to look forward to during the autumn, or is Nashua your main one?
Yeah, I think Nashua and Trushan are my main two, really, to be honest. Yeah. Obviously, the autumn ground, hopefully, will come for Trushan so we can get him back out.
Yeah, thanks, Holly. You're doing my job for me here, because you've given me another link there. I wanted to chat to you briefly about Trushan, because obviously the horse's welfare is the main thing. If the ground's too fast, he doesn't run. And we've spoken before about how you missed a Gold Cup and the rain come a day late. and your mindset, you're so fair with it. Does it get a little bit disappointing? Not from the fact the horse has withdrawn, but the fact you've potentially missed out on another Group 1, because I think you've probably missed three now that he quite well could have won.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, but he won't win unless he's got his conditions, so what's the point, really, in risking him? You know, like, we ran him on good to firm at Goodwood, and he didn't win. He ran well, but we are there to win. We're not there to finish second, third, or fourth. We want to win, so what's the point in risking him on the ground that doesn't suit him?
Yeah, that's a great mindset, Holly, and the reason I ask the question is for people to obviously understand, but also, I had a good time with the Keyboard Warriors after York, the fact that they were moaning at Alan King, you know, downing the horse because he didn't run. And they're quite hurtful comments. Do you take much notice of comments like that, or do you just let it go?
I don't take any notice of them. I mean, if people are following racing, they can't understand that situation, and they probably shouldn't follow racing, to be honest.
You're probably right, and I probably should let it go as well. Just some people's comments, they just baffle me, you know, how they claim themselves to be followers of horse racing, yet they probably had their couple of pound win, as it were, and but the horses are a non-runner anyway, so not that they'd lose money, but yeah, really bizarre.
Yeah.
But I just wondered, you know, because you're right, he ran at Goodwood. I thought he ran a cracker at Goodwood. I really did. I thought he'd come there to win his race, and it was probably the ground, was it, that just didn't let him go through with it?
Yeah, and it was a strong race as well, but you know, if that was soft or heavy, he probably would have won. So Alan King's missed it once and proven to people that this is the reason why we don't run on quicker ground.
Well, exactly right, and he did come there to it. I thought he ran an absolutely brilliant race. If you think that the two horses that beat him were Kyprios and Stradivarius, it just shows you how good he is on ground that is totally unfavourable to him.
Yeah, he's very good, and you know, I can't really knock him for that defeat, really. You know, I got off and I didn't really blame the ground. I just thought it was an extremely strong race. No, I couldn't be happier with him.
Brilliant. That's the point. You're dead right. He could run his best and still finish third in a race like that. So it was a fantastic performance. And if I could just bring up another point you mentioned, which is very valid. You don't think of today. Too many people think of today. If you ruin him today, you haven't got, as you said, the back end of the season when there's plenty of good races that he can go for and win.
Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of options from at the end of the year, and what's the point in having him cropped up pushing those ones?
Well, just finally on other horses, Holly, there's going to be a horse that's probably not going to be there for you to beat next year. I know you and Tom have both spoken him to me, and you're admiring of him, is Stradivarius. It's going to be his last year this year. He's going to be a big loss to racing, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, he's been an amazing horse for everyone and the fans and, you know, and himself. He's a funny character, so people will be sad to see him go.
Yeah, but just a great advert for horse racing, and you know, one less for Trushan to beat, I suppose.
Yeah,
yeah. A couple of other things, if that's okay, Holly, just to chat to you about, is you mentioned at the start of the year how good Nashua could be and she could be a filly to look out for, and you've been absolutely spot on. Can you tell almost immediately when you sit on a horse how good they can be? I mean, I'm not talking about how much potential they're going to grow into, because who knows? As you said, horses grow at different rates and some always don't reach their potential. But when you sit on one, can you tell? And what's the feeling like when you sit on one that good?
I mean, you can get a rough gauge of how good you think they could be. Some can surprise you and some can let you down. But as a jockey, it's probably your job to be able to tell the future lies for some horses.
You're right, you're the final piece of feedback, really, aren't you? You're the one that, as you said, some horses disappoint, some horses improve from home to the track, so you're the final piece of feedback.
Yeah, exactly, and it's what you kind of pick up over the years of experience, I suppose.
Yeah, fabulous. Holly, before we let you go, we spoke about riding abroad, your wish to ride abroad, and how you've achieved that, and you are achieving that. Do you have any ambitions now for next year? I know your ambition initially was to ride as many winners as you can, and then it was to ride, as we said, a group winner, then a group one winner, then a classic winner. Any more ambitions? English classic winner?
Yeah, I'd love to ride an English classic winner, and I've got like Australia and Japan are on my bucket list to go and ride it. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, Australia, obviously Tom's very, very popular in Australia. He does brilliant when he goes over there. I know you like to have individual careers. Is that something you can tie in together so you're not away from each other?
Yeah, hopefully Tom will be out there, so hopefully I can get out there at some point.
Yeah, big country, but it'll be great if you can, and obviously Japan, all those big races. So you've had success in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, yeah. Haven't been to Japan yet.
No, fabulous. Plenty for you to do there, Holly. Well, I'm so grateful for you to give your time up. You've already given quite a bit up today. Just to say that you've mentioned the Breeders' Cup and the Art Weekend. They're already on my list, but you've mentioned them. you could be there those weekends. So all I'm going to say is, Holly, we'll catch up with you soon when you've got time. I know you're busy. Good luck for the rest of the season. Good luck for the ARC weekend, especially if Nashua goes there and perhaps the Breeders' Cup.
Thank you.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Holly. Another fabulous interview. We always appreciate your time. And after a short ad break, it's Sam Thomas, head coach at Principia College.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Today I'm joined by somebody, he's a very good friend of mine, but he's slightly different from the normal female professional player we have on. He's a college coach, he's a recruiter in the USA and the world. And I'm delighted to say, this week we're joined by Sam Thomas, all the way from Principia College in Illinois. Hi Sam, how are you?
Hi John, I'm great. How are you doing today?
Really well, thank you. Really, really well. Lovely for you to join us and give us an insight on part of what we do. We obviously like to send girls to America to play football under education. But you're the people we need to impress. You are a coach. So, we'll get the listeners to know a little bit more about you, then go on to what you're doing at the moment. If you could just start off by telling us, you know, your love for football, how it started and when you got into the game.
Yeah, of course. First of all, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be on. It's a pleasure to get a chat with friends. Yeah, so when I was young, I've got three brothers, and as soon as each of us could walk, our parents started throwing us in sport. And so go to golf and tennis and hockey and football and baseball and this, that, and the other. And so the three that stuck for me when I was little was baseball, basketball, and obviously football. And played those all growing up, all the way through high school. So through age 18, I played all three. And then when I got to college, I had to drop one. Most people drop two and just focus on one if you're doing most. But I went to a small school, which afforded me the chance to do multiple. And so for me, that was football and baseball. Now, the reason that I was able to do that was I was a goalkeeper. I was never anyone who was going to blow an opponent away with skills or speed. But I had a good frame and I had good hands. And so I made my trade in the goal. And yeah, after 2 years of baseball, I had an injury which ended my pitching career. And so I was able to focus solely on football. And that was honestly kind of when the passion fully took over. It was always a sport I played, always a sport I loved. But I didn't have the same connection to the sport that I did with baseball because baseball was very much my main passion sport. And so I kind of arrived late to the real love of the game that I have now. And I think that gave me even more of an appreciation for it. It was one of the driving forces into becoming a coach. So it was a bit of a different journey than most might have, but it got me to where I am nonetheless.
Fab, and obviously you mentioned there was three sports. What was the awareness like for soccer, as it's called in America, compared to the other sports? Sure. Was it quite mainstream?
For youth sports, yes. So in youth sports, soccer is the most played sport in America.
Wow.
However, as you get to age 14 to 18, it is also the sport that has the greatest drop-off in rates of players who stop playing. So, you know, there wasn't the awareness when we were young of everyone watching the Premier League and watching the other European competitions because it just wasn't televised at the time like it is now. And the TV rights for the Premier League here in the States are ridiculous. So that access is great for youth players now.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, it was just the go-to sport that every parent put their kid in. And when it came to that truly competitive teenager age, that was when you saw the drop-off, because we didn't have the coaching to develop really elite levels of skill.
Right.
And so when it became truly competitive beyond the youth scope, then there was a big drop-off. But for kids, you know, parents love dropping kids off and getting 2 hours of their day back. And it's the perfect group activity, team activity, tire the kids out, send them home, and they'll take a nap for the parents. You know, it was one of those things culturally. But it's really grown, which obviously, as a lover of the sport, is the biggest thing for me that I love.
So, interestingly, you said that obviously the drop-off is the highest rate, and the initial reaction would be because it's not considered as a main sport in America. But you said it was obviously down to the coaching. Is that because as a person or as a young adult, if you want to do coaching, you're encouraged to go down the more natural sports, you know, baseball, basketball, NFL?
Maybe. I know that the drop-off rate for youth athletes nowadays is not what it was in the 90s. The coaching has improved significantly. The exposure to the game has just, you know, exploded. And so I think that started to change now. But in my experience growing up, there wasn't much culture around diverting athletes into coaching.
Right.
Coaching was something that former athletes kind of fell into, as I did. Nowadays, that's starting to shift where, you know, I'm starting to recruit athletes, and even through their playing years, when you ask them, you know, what do you want to be? And some want to be an accountant, some want to be a structural engineer.
Yeah.
Some are saying, I want to coach. I want to operate in that environment. And obviously, that's the kind of stuff that I really resonate and respond to. But there wasn't much of a culture of expectation of that being a pathway for many when we were younger, regardless of sport. It was just kind of, you play until you're done playing, and if you're good enough, then you get to go coach.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously, that's something that, as you said, you latch onto and you're happy with, the fact that there is the opportunity, as you call it, the pathway to go into coaching at a younger age.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. And that's good. So you obviously grew up, you loved football. How did you get into football at that next level?
Yeah, so obviously, as a goalkeeper, you're in a little bit more high demand for a position with a little bit less competition.
Yeah.
If you're quality, right? And that was the situation I found myself in. So when I was playing in high school, I didn't really have to fight for minutes. And then the same thing happened in college. And as it became my year-round sole sport, then I saw my progress within it, obviously, you know, accelerate. But I think it was specific to being a goalkeeper and being a pretty well-rounded athlete, made it simpler for me to continue ascending the ladder of playing. Whereas, you know, with my athletic platform, if I were required to be good with my feet or particularly fast, I would have struggled. And that's one of the reasons that I couldn't play basketball in college.
Right.
Was I'm not a 6'7", you know, athlete who runs a 4.2 40.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not my platform. But I was good between the posts, and that made it for me.
Fabulous. Great to get some insight. So you graduated. What was your career like?
So I didn't play in any of the bigger leagues. I don't think it's still in place now. I think it's evolved. But the league I played in for 3 years, my last 2 years of college and my first year after college. It was called the PDL, Premier Development League, I believe is what it was called.
Okay.
And it was kind of like an in-between between the lower level pros in the United States and college. Obviously, college athletes can't get paid. Well, they can now in certain ways, but they couldn't back in my day. And that afforded the opportunity for some graduates to get paid to play over the summer as kind of a route into the professional game. So it was more exposure, more games, you know, usually higher level coaching, higher level competition. So I played in that league for 3 years over summers between college seasons and really enjoyed it. And then upon graduating, I did a couple tryouts, went here and there. And as I was going through that process, my assistant coach in college got a head coach position all the way out in Oregon and asked me if I wanted to come help him out for a season while I was still chasing this journey. and I needed the money. So I said yes, headed out there, and that was what I just fell in love with. I stopped wanting to chase playing and wanted to dive headfirst into coaching. As soon as I got my teeth into it, it was all over.
Well, that's fab. We're going to come on to in a little bit about the full circle, as it were, which I think is an amazing story. So you fell into coaching, but you actually found it was for you. I'm quite similar. I mirrored what you were saying when I didn't have good feet. I couldn't go around people. Because I'm not a goalkeeper size either, I found my niche by tackling people and winning the ball and giving it to the people that could play. I found that was what I could do. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. But again, I fell into coaching. It's one of them things, isn't it? I think that if you're passionate about it, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a young player develop into the best they can be.
Absolutely. The thing that I say all the time, my favorite part about coaching are the light bulb moments. When you see someone have that light bulb go off, you know that they have just discovered something that they're going to retain forever. And that's a rung in the ladder of their development. Every light bulb is another rung in the ladder.
Yeah.
And so that's my absolute favorite bit, is when you can actually tangibly track, oh, they just overcame that hurdle. Oh, they just took that next step. Now I know we get to move on to the next. We get to move on to the next. Those are my favorite parts.
And that's a very good point, because all coaches are different and there's plenty of coaches out there that are better than me. But I do find that some coaches try and rush everything at once. And there's nothing wrong with showing different things, but you've got to do it at their own speed. And you're right. You described it perfectly. That light bulb moment when you think they've got it.
Yeah. It's taking a skill and making it habit. Yeah. Right. And that's, when I was a younger coach, and I still am a relatively young coach by most metrics, but when I was first getting started in coaching, I didn't have the perspective to know that you can't coach an athlete on everything all at once, because that was my learning style. I wanted to be told everything I was doing wrong, everything I could be doing better. That was how I wanted to receive my information. I didn't realize that most don't work that way. And so as you're helping athletes develop, that can be a very overwhelming thing. And particularly, and if we're getting into the weeds about the level that I coach in college, particularly for college-age athletes, there are so many things on their mind when they're in school and they've got, you know, 3 to 6 hours of class every day. They've got social responsibilities.
Yeah.
They're away from home, away from family for maybe the first time for most. And then they have to, on top of that, worry about their football. If you give them too much, you know, you're going to fry the brain. It won't be able to keep up. And so making sure that you understand your athletes, understand their learning style, how they best receive that information, then once you have that relationship and that understanding, you can coach to their learning ability. That little dance in there to figure that out, and the relationship building part of that process is probably the other favorite part about coaching that I really fell in love to working with the college athletes.
Yeah.
Because you really get a sense of a person at that time. You get a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that carries on beyond the field. That's, you know, when your former players are having kids and you get to go to the baby shower, they're getting married and you're getting invited to the wedding. Those are the fun parts about coaching that you hang on to after they step off the field.
Thank you, Sam. Another amazing interview, and all the hard and great work you do for the good of women in sport. And after our final ad break, it's our SLB Sports Roundup.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, motorsport, football, NBA and NFL. We start with golf, and on the PGA Tour, it was the CJ Cup from the Congaree Golf Course in South Carolina. And it was won by the newly crowned world number one, Northern Ireland's Rory McIlroy, with a fantastic 17 under par, holding on from one shot from Kurt Kitayama on minus 16 and KH Lee back on minus 15. It was a little bit easier than the one-shot margin suggests. Rory McIlroy standing on the 17th tee on minus 19 and three shots clear. Did drop a shot at both the final holes. However, he was never really in danger due to having that buffer. This week, they go to Bermuda for the Bermuda Championship using the Port Royal Golf Course. The DP World Tour held the Mallorca Open from the San Mantunda Golf Course in Palma, and it was won by German Yannick Paul on minus 15. Paul Waring, minus 14, was joint second with Nikolai von Dellinghausen. Ryan Fox was a disappointment. He started the final round in front, but was three over par, could only finish tied for four. This week it's the Portuguese Masters from the Victoria Club de Golf from the Dom Pedro Victoria Golf Course in the Algarve. The LPGA was back with the BMW Ladies Championship from the Oak Valley Golf Course in North Carolina, and it was won sensationally by the brilliant Lydia Ko on minus 21, finishing her final round 7 under par and 4 shots clear of Andrea Lee, with a 3-way tie for third between Lilia Vu, Hoijin Choi and Hojoy Kim, all on one shot back minus 16. This weekend, the LPGA has another tour event cancelled, but they're back on November the 3rd with the Toto Japan Classic from the Sita Golf Course, using the North Course from Shiga. Horse racing. As we predicted, the Vettern Futurity Stakes last weekend was won by the Aidan O'Brien star 2-year-old August Rodin. Despite connections not realising if he'd handle the soft ground, he put in a dominant performance and probably over-exceeded people's expectations, winning very, very comfortably and shooting himself to the top of the markets for the 2,000 guineas and the Derby next year. John Gosden's horse, who finished second, is also one to look out for. After being outpaced, maybe on that soft ground, he stayed on very nicely to fill in the second berth. The Melbourne Cup, as we have mentioned last week, is the race that stops the nation and is on next week. From Flemington, Australia, we still like Deauville legend and without a fight, and two we mentioned in the past few weeks at bigger prices, Huyamal and Durston. A little bit of ahead news for you the following weekend is the Breeders' Cup from America, the all-aged around-the-world championships, and some for you to look out for. The Juvenile Turf Sprint, we like Blackbeard. The Juvenile Turf Fillies, Blue Rose Sen, especially if the ground is soft, but Mediate will take any ground. The turf should be won by Bay Bridge or Nation's Pride. The Filly and Mare turfs, Nashua if she goes, or Saffron Beach as a backup. The Mile, Modern Games or Kinross. The turf sprint, Golden Pal or Highland Princess. And the classic, Fight Line. Two big races again to look forward to next weekend over in the UK. The Grand Sefton Chase over those Grand National fences. We like Mac Totty, who blew away the cobwebs with a hurdle spin at Cheltenham, and also Editor Dujit, who also looked like he was blowing away the cobwebs on his debut. And the Down Royal Champion Chase, Galvin, but look out for Envoy Allen at a bigger price. Sometimes horses have an in and out season occasionally and then come back stronger than ever. We're hoping that Envoy Allen at a decent price will run Galvin close. Finally, congratulations to our two friends of the show, Holly Doyle and her husband, Tom McCond, who have landed contracts to ride in Japan for the next couple of months. It's been on Holly's tick list. If you've listened to her interviews, she's so pleased she's going, and we're very happy for her. And Tom, who's just going to probably go on to Australia afterwards, is just an international superstar. On to cricket, and it's the T20 World Cup. England and India won their first matches. England beat Afghanistan, made a little bit of a meal of it. India definitely made a meal of beating Pakistan. And if it wasn't for some poor bowling under pressure or the brilliance of Virat Kohli, India would have lost. New Zealand, though, they battered Australia in the first game of the Super 12s with a brilliant 92 from Devon Conway, and also the young Finn Allen, who opens the batting, getting 42 off just 16 balls. It's going to be a fabulous tournament. We cannot wait for it to continue. We still like England and Australia, despite both of them struggling in their first games. Although India, if Cody stays fit and in form, have a great chance. And New Zealand are really coming to the party with this new outstanding and exciting opening batting. On to motorsport, and in MotoGP, it was the Malaysian Grand Prix from the Sepang International Circuit, and Ducati Lenovo's Frankie Bagnaia all but sealed the World Championship. He won a brilliant race from his teammate for next year, Enea Bastianini, who's currently riding for the Ducati Gresini Racing Team. They traded places, but Frankie Bagnaia stayed strong. And Fabio Quartararo, the only man who can stop Frankie Bagnaia becoming champion, rode out of his skin on the underpowered Yamaha to finish third around all those Ducatis. He rode a brilliant race coming from 12th on the grid to keep the championship alive. The standings, Frankie Bagnaia has 258 points. He's 23 ahead of Fabio Quartararo, who's on 235, and Alexia Spargaro still trying to hold on for third place on the Aprilia on 212, but he's just 1 point now ahead of the rejuvenated Enea Bastianini. So when they go to their final round on the 6th of November, which is the Valencia Grand Prix from the circuit Rodrigo Ricardo Tormo, Frankie Bagnaia only has to finish 13th, and Fabio Quartararo has to win the race, or it goes to the Ducati man. World Superbikes, round 10 last weekend, the Argentinian round using the San Juan Villicum circuit. The Super Bowl race was won by Toprak Razzaglioglu on his Yamaha. Second place was Alvaro Bautista, and third place was Jonathan Rea. Alvaro Bautista won race one, Jonathan Rea was second, and Axel Bassini was third on the Ducati on the first lap. And race two was won by Alvaro Bautista. Second place was Toprak. Third place was Jonathan Rea. Alvaro Bautista has nearly secured the championship. He leads on 507 points. Second place, Toprak Razzaglioglu on 425. Third place, Jonathan Rea on 409. They're back on the 13th of November with the Indonesian round, number 11, from the Mandalika Street Circuit. NASCAR. It was a final round of eight. They had the Dixie Vodka 400 from the Homestead Miami Speedway. It was won by Kyle Larson, driving the Chevy Camaro for Hendrick Motorsport. Second place, Ross Chastain, also the Chevy Camaro for Trackhouse Racing. Third place, making it a 1-2-3 for the Chevys, AJ Allmendinger for Cowlick Racing. This leaves the standings as follows. There's only eight left that can win it. We're in the round of eight. Joey Logano leads the way. Ford Mustang for Team Penske. Ross Chastain is second. Chase Elliott, Chevy Camaro for Hendrick Motorsport is third. And William Byron is fourth. The other four left in who are on the bubble are Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, Christopher Bell and Chase Briscoe. We move into the penultimate round of the championship and the final round of eight with the Xfinity 500 from Martinsville Speedway. This is the penultimate round, as we've said, with only one round left. And after Martinsville, 5th through 8th get eliminated, and it's just the top 4 that can win the NASCAR Series Cup Championship. Formula 1, and it was the USA Grand Prix from the Circuit of the Americas. Brilliantly fast circuit, all the drivers love it, and it was won incredibly by Max Verstappen and his Red Bull. Second place was Lewis Hamilton for Mercedes, and third place Charles Leclerc for Ferrari. It was a brilliant drive from all the top 3 drivers. And when I say incredibly done by Max Verstappen, it was his 13th win of the year. But a bad pit stop from Red Bull put him in third place behind Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. And he passed both of them to win the race. Yes, he has the fastest car in a straight line, but it was still a brilliant drive. Charles Leclerc started near the back of the grid and drove brilliantly to come through third. But a special shout out to 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. They're at least 10 kilometres in a straight line slower than the Red Bull, half that slower than the Ferrari. But Lewis managed to pull away from Charles Leclerc and managed to last until 5 laps from the end before Max Verstappen caught and passed him. It was a great drive from Lewis, and he was also on the slower tyre, the hard tyre, after they all stopped. I'm just wondering whether the slower tyre meant that Lewis lost the race or it kept him in second because tyre wear was quite tough at the Circuit of the Americas. Max Verstappen, world champion, lead to standings on 391. Charles Leclerc is second, 124 points behind on 267. And Sergio Perez is 2 points behind, back in third on 265. Red Bull have nearly won the Constructors' Championship on 656. Ferrari are second on 469, with Mercedes again closing them down on 416. Moving on to football, and we have two sets of results for you, and we'll start in the Premier League, and we'll start with weekday 12. Brighton 0, Nottingham Forest 0. Crystal Palace 2, Wolverhampton 1. Arsenal versus Manchester City was postponed. Bournemouth 0, Southampton 1. Liverpool 1, West Ham 0. Brentford 0, Chelsea 0. Newcastle 1, Everton 0. Manchester United 2, Tottenham 0. Fulham 3, Aston Villa 0. Leicester 2, Leeds 0. Well, the Aston Villa defeat 3-0 to Fulham saw the end of Steven Gerrard. He was finally sacked from his position after not really making a good impression at Aston Villa. I bet he wished he'd stayed at Rangers, but we all learn by our mistakes. Matchday 13 results, Nottingham Forest 1, Liverpool 0, Everton 3, Crystal Palace 0, Manchester City 3, Brighton 1, two more goals for Erling Haaland, Chelsea 1, Manchester United 1, Wolverhampton 0, Leicester 4. Two wins on the bounce for Leicester, who were stuck at rock bottom. I don't know what's changed, but Brendan Rodgers, has he turned a corner? Aston Villa 4, Brentford 0. The first game without Steven Gerrard. It's surprising what either a change in manager or a new reflection by an interim manager has on a team. Southampton 1, Arsenal 1, Leeds 2, Fulham 3, Tottenham 1, Newcastle 2. We can bring you the West Ham versus Bournemouth result next week. The top six in the table stands as follows. Arsenal played 11, 28 points. Manchester City played 11, 26 points. Tottenham played 12, 23 points. Newcastle played 12, 21 points with a goal difference of 10. Chelsea played 11, also 21 points with a goal difference of 5. And Manchester United, the sixth, played 11, goal difference of 20. Just 3 points between third and sixth place. And things are really creeping up at the top of the table. Without Liverpool, who slumped to another defeat at Nottingham Forest. Matchday 14's fixtures, Leicester versus Manchester City, Newcastle versus Aston Villa, Bournemouth versus Tottenham, Brighton versus Chelsea, Crystal Palace versus Southampton, Brentford versus Wolverhampton, Fulham versus Everton, Liverpool versus Leeds, Arsenal versus Nottingham Forest, and Manchester United versus West Ham. The WSL was back this week with Matchday 5's fixtures. Tottenham 0, Manchester City 3, Aston Villa 0, Everton 1, Liverpool 0, Arsenal 2, Leicester 0, Manchester United 1, West Ham 3, Reading 2, Brighton 0, Chelsea 2. The top three in the league are as follows. Arsenal and Manchester United are joint top, both played for. Both 1-4 with 12 points, and both have a plus 11 goal difference, scored 11, let in 0. Absolutely cannot be separated. Third place Chelsea, also on 12 points, with a goal difference of plus 7, but they've played 5. Matchday 6 fixtures, Chelsea versus Aston Villa, Manchester City versus Liverpool, Reading versus Leicester, Everton versus Manchester United, Brighton versus Tottenham, and Arsenal versus West Ham. We move to the NBA, and the season has now started. And on the first night, it was the conference winners of the East and the West. The Celtics took on the 76ers and won 126-117. And the Golden State Warriors took on the Lakers and won 123-109. We'll round down the featured teams from each conference. The Celtics in the East are 3-0, along with their day one result. They've also beaten the Miami Heat 111-104 and the Orlando Magic 126-120. The Bucks, who we tipped to win it this year, are 2-0. They beat the 76ers 90-88 and the Rockets 123-105. The Nets are 1-1. They started with a loss to the Pelicans 108-130, but then beat the Raptors 109-105. And of course, the Knicks, who are also 1-1. They started with an overtime loss at the Grizzlies, which was a great performance despite defeat. They lost 112-115 and then thrashed the Pistons 130-106. In the West, obviously the Golden State Warriors, who are now 2-1 after beating the Lakers on day one. They then had a rare reversal at home, getting beat by the Denver Nuggets 123-128, but then beat the Sacramento Kings 130-125. The Jazz, who are always up in the top two or three every year, are 3-0, unsurprisingly. They've defeated the Nuggets 123-102, the Timberwolves 132-126, and then a last gasp win against the Pelicans 122-121. The Clippers are 2-1. They've got a great chance this year. They beat the Lakers 103-97, then the Kings 111-109, but had a reversal to the Suns, who are another team to watch out for, but didn't make our shortlist of four, 95-112. And the fourth team is made up by a franchise, but they're a struggling franchise. It's the Lakers. They're 0-3. After their first day loss to the Golden State Warriors, they then lost the derby to the Clippers, 97-103, and then lost their most recent game, 104-106, to the Trailblazers, having said that, they were in a winning position and they threw it away. So they're 0-3 and they are struggling. Others to note in the East Conference are the Cavaliers, who've built a good side. They're 2-1. And in the West, the Trailblazers, 3-0, and the Suns, who are 2-1. The fixtures of our highlighted teams are the Celtics play the Bulls, the Cavs and the Wizards in the next week. The Bucks play the Nets, the Knicks and the Hawks and the Pistons. And the Nets also have four matches against the Grizzlies, the Bucks, the Mavericks and the Pacers. The Knicks, Magic, Hornets, Bucks and Cavaliers. So another hard four for the Knicks, but I think they could do well in those four. In the West, the Golden State Warriors play the Suns, the Heat, the Hornets and the Pistons. The Jazz, looking to extend their unbeaten 100% record, play the Rockets twice, then the Nuggets and the Grizzlies. The Clippers face the Thunder twice, the Pelicans and the Rockets. And the Lakers, trying to get off the mark, have the Nuggets, the Timberwolves and then the Nuggets again. On to NFL. And weekday 7. The results: the Cardinals 42, the Saints 34, the Ravens 23, the Browns 20, the Panthers 21, the Buccaneers 3. Another poor day at the office for Tom Brady. The Bengals 35, the Falcons 17, Jaguars 17, the Giants 23, Cowboys 24, the Lions 6, the Commanders 23, the Packers 21. Another bad game for the Packers, who yet again threw away another winning position. Not sure what's going on with Aaron Rodgers and the team, but they need to sort it quickly. However, they have a top flight fixture, as you'll hear, and it might be the thing that sparks them into action. The Titans 19, the Colts 10, Raiders 38, Texans 20, Broncos 9, Jets 16, 49ers 23, the Chiefs 44. A brilliant performance by Patrick Mahomes, back in form, and the Chiefs are looking special again. Chargers 23, Seahawks 37, Dolphins 16, the Steelers 10. Patriots versus the Bears will bring you next week, and there was no game this week for the Bills or the Eagles. Teams to note: in the AFC, the Bills are 5-1 with a match in hand in the East, and the West see the Chiefs at 5-2 leading the way. The two worst teams in the conference are the Broncos in the West, 2-5. It's poor for Russell Watson. He hasn't gelled yet with the team, and it's showing for the Broncos. And the Steelers in the North are also 2-5. In the NFC, the 100% unbeaten Eagles, who didn't have a game last week, are 6-0. In the East, the Giants are 6-1, and the Cowboys are 5-2, all in the same division. And quite clearly, it's the best division in the whole of the NFL. The Vikings are leading the way. Easily 5-1 in the North, with the Packers offering no resistance as yet. The worst teams in the North, the Lions are 1-5, and the Panthers and the Saints, both in the South, are 2-5. Week 8 fixtures: the Bucks play the Ravens, the Jags play the Broncos, the Lions play the Dolphins, Falcons play the Panthers, the Vikings play the Cardinals, the Cowboys versus the Bears, Saints versus the Raiders, Eagles versus the Steelers, Jets versus the Patriots, Texans versus the Titans, the Seahawks versus the Giants, the Colts versus the Commanders, the Rams versus the 49ers, the Bills versus the Packers, and the Browns versus the Bengals. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, that's the end of another brilliant, brilliant show. The final one of October, and next week's will be into November. I want to say huge thanks to Holly Doyle, now on her way to Japan to tick another thing off the bucket list to do after a brilliant season, and also Sam Thomas, head coach at Principia College, for the soccer team and all the great work he does for women in sport. Thank you to you, the listeners, as always. We appreciate you tuning in, and to Johan, Rafaela and the team at UK Health Radio for the amazing platform that they give us. We'll see you all next week.